This is episode one of Omaha Talks. I am your co-host, Parker Steele. I am in the in-house mobile studio with my co-host, Brandon Urbell.
Hey, how's it going?
And we are visiting our friend and our first guest, author of Omaha Food, Bigger Than Beef, Rachel Grace. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're excited to do this.
Yeah.
So we are here to talk about Rachel's book that was published 2 years ago?
Just shy of 2 years,
yeah.
So November. It is November.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago.
It was 2 years ago. Holy shit.
Rachel and I are old friends. She is a Philadelphia native that moved to Omaha almost 8 years ago?
Seven
years ago.
Almost seven.
And we had a lot of mutual friends, and when she put out this book, it was just really exciting for not only us, but for Omaha as well. So let's get into it. Rachel, how you doing?
I'm good, yeah. It's Friday.
It is Friday.
That's always a nice feeling. Just thinking back to the time 2 years ago when I did put out the book, I'm just realizing I had that release party on a Friday.
You did.
And
I was there.
You were there. You played it.
Your band I did.
I draft your book.
I wouldn't have had anyone else play it. I was so glad that your band...
Well, let's talk about that for just a second before we get into it. So, Rachel had her book release party at the former New Black location, which was on 16th and Jones. 13th
and Jones.
13th and Jones.
Yeah.
Super old building, great space. And my band, we were so nervous that we were going to burn the place down because there were like four outlets and we had about 3,000 volts.
Which you didn't tell me until like 6 months ago.
I thought I was just telling you now.
Maybe it was Dave.
It might have been Dave.
Somebody told me that, you know, it's a miracle that the building didn't burn down.
Yeah, yeah. We kept looking at, like, outlets looking for sparks, and it didn't happen. But we're happy to have you here.
I love that you didn't, like, alert me to that. Little known fact, I am so afraid of fire. I'm the type that, like, checks the stove before I leave the house every single day.
Oh, me too.
Unplugs things like a total freak.
Have you ever thought that, like, you left the oven or the iron on and left work to go home?
Yeah, yes.
Me too.
Like,
was it ever on?
No.
Yeah, me either.
I've been with, like, candles because I light candles throughout the whole house.
Yeah.
I had, like, 20 candles lit. I'm like, did I light or did I blow them all out?
Right. And then you come home and they were blowing out, weren't you?
Yeah, even though I took, like, 15 minutes out of my trip to come back to just make sure. But
and that's not OCD, folks. That's just safety first, all right? So let's not get carried away. Anyway, we are here to talk about this book. And it's a great book. It's about the history of Omaha food leading up to contemporary stuff. I mean, and it's a super good book. Rachel, you're not a native of Omaha.
Why?
Let's talk about where you're from.
From Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Maybe you've heard of it.
Yep.
It's funny because people who, you know, are not from there, maybe have visited, the response is always, I love Philly. And my response is always, what?
Right.
I have a love-hate relationship with it. Now that I go back to visit, I'm like, oh, this is so lovely. I like it. But then there's always that moment where some just, like, nastiness kind of comes through. Like,
sure.
Some, you know, altercation on the street or, like, the, you know, train guys just being a complete ass. And you're like, oh,
right.
Yeah, this is why this place is it's a little rough around the edges, you know?
Do you think that you're growing up in Philadelphia and coming to Omaha, like, let's talk about that, because you moved here. How old were you when you moved here?
Oh, well, the first time I visited, I was 24, and I was 26 when I moved here.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because you worked at a couple of restaurants when you first moved, right?
Yeah. Well, so what happened was I was living in Germany and teaching. I was working at a university teaching advanced English. I say advanced because my students were little bitches constantly, you know.
Oh, little bitches.
Like, just asking so many questions. And I think it's part of the reason I was able to write a book, because I got really, you know, practiced on my grammar knowledge.
Sure.
But anyway, so living there, working there, there's a semester break, and you know, that means there's 2 months off and I'm in a foreign country and I can't just like pick up a job for right. money. So I'm thinking, well, let's just come back to the US and make a few bucks. And so the first time I went to New York for 2 months, I had a friend who had an apartment there and got a job at a restaurant and did that whole thing for, a, you know, 8 or 10 weeks or whatever it was. And the second time, I needed to do it again, but I had kind of tapped my well in New York and was looking at Omaha thinking, you know, actually originally it was supposed to be Lincoln. I had a friend who lived in Lincoln with a couch and that was all like set to go.
Sure.
And the things that you miss when you live abroad, I was like, but Lincoln doesn't have a Whole Foods.
Yeah.
So, and Omaha does. They do now.
Yeah.
And I was like, little did I know that Whole Foods is like really hard to get to by bus in Omaha.
Sure.
So I wound up like never going. But that was the excuse that I gave her.
Fair enough.
What? Wound up in Omaha for about 2 months that time. And I worked at a couple restaurants here. So.
Okay.
And then, you know, I had to basically pretend that I wasn't going to leave after a couple months. But then I did move back to Germany for another 6 months or so, and then came back here, tried out Seattle, couldn't hash it there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What was it about, I mean, just for the sake of this conversation.
Yeah.
Talking about Seattle, you know, it seems like that is definitely a culinary epicenter.
Oh, yeah.
And Brandon, you lived in Seattle for a couple of years.
I lived there for a year, and honestly, it was one of the places that kind of just sparked my interest into the culinary world. I mean, pho is literally, like, every block, as many Starbucks as there is pho places.
Sure.
And, I mean, it's the first place I tried Indian food and really good Thai food. I mean, it opened up my eyes to the culinary world. Like, yeah, it was.
And it's readily available.
It
wasn't a place where you had to seek it out.
It was everywhere.
Did you have the same experience there, food-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't there too long, but what I did have was every day was a little bit of an adventure. Like, where are we going to eat? And what I think I found was that it was pretty accessible for those types of things. Like, you weren't, you know, having to spend $1 million to eat out every day.
Right. Very cultured. And I lived right by Pike's Market, so I was able to go down there and, like, have access to fresh pasta and king crab legs that were the size of your arm.
That
and,
was
like,
the
best.
It was
the seafood.
Do you remember those in that market, they have those little buns that they've had a funny name for just in that market.
Is it the pierogi?
No, they're like Asian humbao or something. They're like
Buns?
They're like pork steam buns, but they had a very specific name
right
at that place in Pike Place Market.
See, I don't know. I'm ashamed to admit I've never been to Seattle. It's on my list. I wanted to come out and visit Brandon when he was living there, but, you know, was poor as a savage church mouse.
And that would not work there.
It wouldn't.
In general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
So you spent some time in Seattle, but you made your way back to Omaha.
Yes. I, you know, thought this is the place to spend a good 6 months after all this crazy moving around.
Sure.
Get back on your feet, you know, financially and take it from there. And it's been 7 years. So,
awesome.
You know.
Well, we're glad you came. Rachel and I have been friends for a long time. We had a lot of mutual friends when she showed up. And one thing that we would always talk about was food. And Brandon and I are actually from Grand Island, Nebraska, which, although is a small, somewhat desolate town, because of its diverseness, there was a lot of varied restaurants. I mean, great, amazing Mexican food, Vietnamese food.
Yep.
There's Cuban restaurants there now. And these weren't like savvy places. You know, it wasn't like a posh thing. We're talking the late 90s, early 2000s. So it hadn't been picked up. So I think that Rachel, honestly, a lot of stuff that we would talk about when we first met was kind of on the same trip. And it was prior to the whole food boom. This is pre no reservations, you know, or maybe around the same time, but it wasn't, let's just say that white people hadn't quite picked up on it yet.
At least here.
Right. At least here. Know. At least here.
Not to be too hard on ourselves. But
no,
yeah,
not at
was,
all.
Because, you know, things weren't quite happening yet.
Right.
It felt a little, like, special to talk about.
Sure, you know? Sure.
So. I remember, like, living in the old market and being poor and watching the Food Network to, like, in a way, like, just look at all the good food that I could have at some point.
Yeah.
Like, and I just fell in love with, like, the Food Network, and then that's when, you know, Anthony Bourdain and all those other things. But I, you know, I fell in love with the culinary world, like, in, like, early 2000s, and
Right.
And then, yeah, it really hasn't boomed until I would say just within the last, like, you know, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. But I, you know,
and it's always been around.
Sure.
Like, I guess, like, culturally, like,
it's, the spotlight, you know, hadn't been shined. Sure. And that was why I appreciate your perspective, Rachel, is because you came from the East Coast. And I think it's super interesting that you, with your perspective, you know, we grew up in the middle of fucking nowhere. And you, it almost made me appreciate Omaha more, because you had seen way more of the world than I had at the time that we met, and you had an appreciation for this, and it totally, it kind of gave me a little kick in my ass a little bit as far as what we've got. And this is an Omaha podcast. That's what we're here to talk about. So
yeah, take it away. Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't, say that because, I mean, I joke on my blog, actually, like, well, I do actually know everything about food, because I'm, like, there have been trolls commenting, like, just because you're from there doesn't mean that you know everything about food.
Oh, Jesus.
And, like,
Christ.
Actually, I do. I thought I made that clear.
Yeah. Isn't that why you're reading this blog,
isn't
asshole?
That, you know, just kidding. I don't. And the thing that's happened in Philly over the last 10 years is very similar. It mirrors here, honestly. Like, it's always been pretty good for food, and there are places, you know, to go and exciting things to do, but it's, like, really ramped up over the last 3 to 5 years.
Oh, that's cool.
I think more than ever.
So, really? Even in, like, your neighborhood?
Yeah.
Do you see it, like, being a little more friendly as far as...
In Philly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well...
Because you go back pretty often.
I do, yeah. I'm about to go back next month and actually spend time, like, a block from where I live. So,
cool.
You know, I'll report back on that. But, yeah, I mean, I still read Philly Mag every month or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just get the sense that they've gone through a typical kind of renaissance that, you know, we are experiencing as well, just to a different degree.
Sure.
So I wouldn't necessarily say that it's something like, you know, we've been super far behind on. We just maybe kind of started, like, a little bit, I don't know, at a level that's different than a large city.
So. Sure. Yeah.
But it's a thing that's happening across the country for sure.
So let's switch gears and let's talk about this book. So you started a blog.
Started a blog.
Fat in Omaha.
It was called Fat in Omaha because, well, I may have been getting a little fat in Omaha.
We all do.
We all do, yeah.
I mean, you know.
But what was your, you know, what... Gosh, I'm trying to remember.
Well,
you know.
Why did I start it? Like, why
well,
did
yeah,
I
and where did you start out with it? I can't even remember.
Well,
like,
can I just say it's a lot of what you guys were just talking about being kind of passionate about the places that you like to go. At that time, it's 2010 and 2011 is mm-hmm. when I started it. So, you know, meeting people just moved here. People would take out bar napkins and write, like, "You've got to go to these places."
Sure.
You know, like, "Get me a pen. Like, these are the ones you have to see." And, you know, I hadn't really experienced that before. Like, this level of just absolute passion and insistence on,
the
like,
of like,
you
yeah.
must go here. And it's mm-hmm. funny because thinking back, like, one of them was like, "Mama's Pizza." And I'm like, oh, I don't actually have to go there.
I know.
But some of them were great. Like, you know, you have to check out the Bohemian Cafe, and which, you know.
The defunct Bohemian Cafe.
What it is. But the atmosphere is, you know, unrivaled. And so... just thinking, God, these guys really love their restaurants,
yeah.
you know, so I better check them out.
Sure.
And then they'd say, "Hey, you know, whoever it is, you or other people, like, what did you think of that?"
Mm-hmm.
And I started to lose track because right. I was going out to lunch every single day.
Right.
Hence the, you know, fat.
Right.
So I think that...
And you weren't walking anywhere.
Well,
these were
point,
all car trips and bus trips.
This was all car trips. This yeah. before my car broke down, so it was a car thing. And so... you know, the idea originally was, one, I like to write, two, to keep track.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't supposed to be anything special. Like,
sure.
You know.
But you amassed this, I mean, you had quite a few posts, and it was stuff. What I thought was really cool about it is, although we were friends and hanging out here and there, like, you were going to places I had never heard of.
And that
you know?
Was the point. Like, let's figure out what some of these just uncovered spots are. It was never really to talk about the newest opening that,
right.
that the World Herald's talking about.
Sure.
It was always like, let's find kind of the weirdest place that's a hole in the wall
mm-hmm.
in a strip mall that's actually really good. And maybe it was really bad.
Right.
But I think found some gems that way.
Worth
and
mentioning.
That was kind of the point, because I will never claim to be, you know, to have like a superior palate or anything. I'm actually kind of picky.
Sure.
So, like, yeah, it was more, and, you know, the name of the blog, Fat in Omaha, was meant to kind of poke fun at some things and just sort of say, like, you know, what's the best kind of comfort food that I can find.
Right. And it wasn't, that's kind of what I appreciated from it, was it, you weren't going to, like, well, this place's foie gras is way shittier than this other place's foie gras. You know, you were going to... Yeah. To places that were almost, you know, shitty comfort food that do appeal to people in their 20s, you know, and that is just good. But this ultimately led up to this book. And what I really, really like about this book is that you kind of, I mean, there's not really like a narrowed vision in it. You know, it's from top to bottom. But how did this start? Where did you start? How did that happen?
Well, I would say, so the blog had been going on for a while. Started in 2011, and this was 2014, I think, okay, when the publisher got in touch and said, hey, you know, we need a book about Omaha food. Would you be interested in writing that? And they came across me through the blog.
Wow, so they reached out to you. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Wow.
And I had thought of writing a book for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew, you know, that's not the kind of thing you can just willy-nilly do.
Especially in 2014, like it.
Well, yeah.
It's and not like a book culture, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, I could do it, but then shopping it around sounded like a nightmare, and, you know. And also, I didn't want to waste people's time. I didn't want to interview people and be like, I don't know, this might see the light of day, or maybe not.
It's kind of what we're doing right now.
You know, whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so the opportunity came along, which was, you know, kind of sealed the deal for me. I almost didn't write it, actually. I almost said, you know, this is going to be a huge undertaking.
Oh,
and,
sure.
Like, you know, I had submitted my proposal, and I was sitting there, like, thinking about it one night, had a couple beers, like, I don't know, this is gonna take up like my life for like a year.
Yeah.
You know, do I really want to do this? I was like, maybe I want to do music instead right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe I want to focus on that because I think I have to pick one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a concert, and I was just kind of standing there watching a band.
Do you remember what band?
It was Digital Leather.
Oh, okay.
And
I've heard of them. Yeah.
You've heard of them. I was at the Sydney.
Okay.
And a guy in front of me was jumping up and down. Was not a mosh pit. It was just a boisterous young fellow.
Sure.
Enjoying himself.
Having a good time.
But, like, outside of his personal space. Encroaching on others.
Okay.
And...
Oh, he was that guy.
It was that guy. And I put my hand up to, like, shield myself. And he bumped into it really hard and broke my pinky.
Oh, Jesus, I remember this.
Yeah,
okay,
and
keep
so
going,
cause it's
going.
Like, you know, 1:45 a.m., and I'm like, I think there's something wrong with my finger. And everyone's like, nah.
That was a loud noise.
Yeah, I'm like, it's a weird shape right now. I don't think it really like, kind of hurts. And like,
I wish we could find who that was.
I think I might know.
Oh, okay.
And
we'll out him once this becomes successful.
I actually thanked him in the
in
the book. Because at that moment I couldn't play guitar.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I could have. You can play without a pinky, but not really. You know, I mean, it would have been a pain. I took it as a sign to write the book.
Right.
So there you have it. So I decided to write it, and I don't think, like, I knew it was going to be huge, but I don't think I quite knew what I was getting into.
Sure.
Something like, I don't know, 40 interviews and 100 photos later. Of course, I decided to take all my own photos, almost all of them. Had some help from a couple friends with the portraits. I'm not a portrait photographer just yet.
That's weird.
It's, you know, you really gotta like you gotta connect with people.
Uh-huh.
And that is like...
Find their light.
Yeah.
I'm looking for that soul.
That's a
it's like, but we gotta wrap this up in 15 minutes. No, I know exactly what you mean. But that it's awesome. I mean, that's something that Brandon and I talked about, that you took these photos and you...
Well, so like... One of the things about the photos, like, obviously the ones that you took, and then the ones that you didn't take, you credited everyone, but, like, did they come to you, or did you, like, seek after all those photos? Because, like, I was talking to him about the 49er. Like, him and I frequented the 49er quite a bit. And if that sign was the way it was before it got, like, torn down, I never noticed it. But, like, when I saw that picture in the book, I was just, like, blown away by just the photos and the history that it captured, and... That Chinese restaurant that's downtown as well.
Oh,
that,
King Fong. Mm-hmm. Is it even, I don't think it's not open anymore.
It just reopened.
Missy
told
it?
Yeah, so I found out that it is reopened, but it like blew me away because it's so beautiful and I had no idea. But the photos in the book are great, and it was things that, like, you know, for living here for the better part of the last 15 years, I hadn't even, you know, seen some of this stuff.
So yeah, that's what I think is so great about this book is, I'll say it again, you know, Brandon and I and Rachel, none of us are Omaha natives. So what I thought was, but we are food people. So what was so cool about this book is that I was seeing things and reading things, and I read it the night I, or whatever, in the 2 weeks that I got it. But it was just so refreshing, and you guys will enjoy this book, whether or not you live in Omaha, because you are going to see things and you are going to read things in this book that you've never seen before. I don't care how savvy you are. It's a great read. And definitely, like, a place like that, the King, what's it called again?
King Fong.
King Fong. So that is something that I have heard.
It looks like a palace.
It does. It looks like 1970s Chinese restaurant when that was exotic, and they dumped money into it and made it look like the goddamn Forbidden City.
Yeah,
it's, you know, insane. Like, it just is beautiful.
Like, you didn't even want to sit down at a table. It's so, like, immaculate.
Right, right.
Like, it's, yeah.
Do I need a tie for this?
We should go.
We should go.
I think it opened originally in like 1917 or something.
Jesus Christ.
So it was Omaha's oldest restaurant. Then it temporarily closed, I guess. So yeah. Then I think it was Johnny's Cafe in South O that was.
How
the
many
oldest.
Johnny's are there in Omaha?
I think there's two.
Okay.
And there's been some funny business lunches that have gotten really messed up about this. Yeah. Like, where half of us go to the one.
And then the other ones go. Yeah, because there's the one at Village Point, and then you got Johnny Sortino's. Like, why don't we just. Let's trademark this Johnny's thing. And, yeah. But
so, well, the one in South O is obviously the first.
That's the joint. Right, right.
Because, you know, 1922, I believe.
Yeah, so God
crazy.
Damn.
Those years, too. That's insane.
I know. I mean, we're talking like pre-Depression, you know?
Yeah.
That's fucking nuts. So you start writing this book. You start exploring. This is a big undertaking. Writing a book about anything, especially a nonfiction book, like research is a pain in the ass. It's extensive. So,
I didn't talk to anyone.
Okay.
For a year.
Right. Other than
which,
in the
side
work.
Note, you can do anything you put your mind to. You
sure.
Just might not, you know, talk to anyone
right.
for a year.
Right.
No problem. No big deal. But at least you have something you've worked towards. And I did, one of my degrees is in history. So
okay.
I like ate this up. I was like, yes, I want to be combing through these historical files.
So you weren't a stranger to research.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
The little bit that I've been able to go through the book, that was the thing that like just blew me away, was like all the historical facts, like Drover being the first salad bar in Omaha. I mean, just little things like that. I was just like, it just was blowing my mind, like just reading all these things.
Well, I don't want to go through this book piece by piece, but I do want to talk about some stuff. Because you guys should definitely check out this book. But let's get in here. Let's start talking about stuff. I just have a couple bookmarks that I want to pull past you real
all right.
quick.
All right, let's do it.
So actually, you just brought up the Drover. Fuck these bookmarks. Let's talk about the Drover.
I went for the first time 2 months ago with my mom and with my wife, and it was. I mean, I've had plenty of steaks growing up in Nebraska,
right.
and it was like a. Life-changing experience.
It's a little more about it. It's more than a steak, right, Rachel?
Well. I actually went not long
and,
ago.
And I think the amount of like places that you can go to and choose from, but
right.
Like, for yeah, going to all the steakhouses in you know, middle Nebraska and every you know. How many steaks have we had in
oh,
there?
Oh, Jesus
like,
fucking Christ.
Thousands. I mean,
and
yeah.
did you have the whiskey steak?
But the whiskey steak,
yeah.
that's what I had. I got the most expensive thing you could get. It was like $56, like, filet, I think, and
just
Missy
a slab
and I,
of
and we
beautiful cow.
It wasn't even like that big, and Missy and I shared it, and we were like melting. We were just like, it's a game changer.
Loving
like,
it.
Yeah, it was amazing. And
I sat at the bar last time I went there, had an old fashioned.
Yeah,
and
the atmosphere
that
is insane. Very dark and like dimly lit.
Yeah,
very,
it's a time machine.
It's very Midwestern though. It's that's the thing is like growing up in Grand Island and Hastings, and you know growing up in the smaller towns like. Those type of steakhouses are everywhere. Just like that dimly lit leather seats, you know, like just salad
cancer
bar.
Growing on the walls.
yeah,
you know,
like,
there's asbestos in there. You don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You, But let's talk about your first time at the. Let's talk about your first time and your last time
at the Drover. Okay, the first time I went for lunch, and you know they have those little side rooms.
Yeah.
Coves. Yeah, I was in a cove where there's I think 4 tables. I was with my ex-husband, and we split, you know, a hamburger and a Reuben or whatever. And the other people in the room, I think it was one other table, it was like business dudes, and they're like Old Spice or whatever. In this tiny cove was so overpowering. Oh my it was God. Insane.
That's like a seasoning. That's a fucking seasoning on the steak. Basically, Old Spice, some Brut, yeah. Actif Blue.
Oh, yes. So I won't, you know, it's been a while. I won't forget that ever.
Right.
Yeah, it was pungent. And then.
But it made an impression. You were like, oh, fuck, this is different. Like, had you ever been in a place like that before?
I had not.
Okay.
No, there's nothing like that up to that point I had been to. The salad bar was, like, just really... That was, like, a creative kind of exercise for me. Imagining, like, it's supposedly Omaha's first salad bar.
Right.
Like, from the 60s.
Right.
And it looks like it has not been updated.
Yeah, right. Claim to fame.
Since. Right. Like, they just serve the same iceberg lettuce, the same Dorothy Lynch dressing, the bacon bits that buckets. Are, like, made of soy, whatever. Like, that
Those bacon bits may... have been created in the 60s. I mean,
yeah, that's the same thing. Yeah.
I mean, do they rotate the product? Right, it doesn't matter because still be just fine.
Right.
Yeah. So lots of like thoughts about that goofy salad bar, which, you know.
But it made an impression. I mean, but then your last time there, you said you sat at the bar, you had an old fashioned. Did you connect with the bartender at all? Did you get to shoot the shit?
Shot the shit a little bit, and actually somebody, like one of my neighbors from Dundee, wound up sitting next to
fucking
us.
Fucking Omaha.
Right.
Just makes me think of the Bakers on Salad Creek.
I'm telling you, man.
You can go to the Bakers on Salad Creek, and you'll find like 10 people we haven't seen in 5 years.
And they probably think I hate them, because I don't engage. Give them a hug.
Right, right.
Isn't that like a rule where you're not supposed to like, because you don't know what they're buying. They could be buying like...
adult diapers.
Right. So you're
maybe
just
a plan B.
You're just
you know.
Supposed to like nod.
Maybe they're buying Ben and Jerry's. Yeah. That's been me. I've been buying Ben and Jerry's pints of ice cream at 4 in the morning at Baker's, and I don't want to bump in.
Right. Well, what I hate is when you go there and you have the awkward conversation, and then you go to a next aisle and you see him again, and you're just like, well, shit, I already talked to you. I already said goodbye.
That is
how many times
the law of diminishing returns. Yeah, I know. And you already made you had your little chit chat.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, it was good to see you. And then you fucking meet each other at the asparagus, and it's just like, oh, it looks pretty good today, doesn't it? God damn it.
Actually, the last person I ran to is Jeff, our friend who's here tonight.
Oh, well, that's easy.
And I like grunted at him.
Yeah. And he probably grunted back. Yeah, that's easy.
I thought he was anyway.
So the Drover, you had that. You went back, that made an impression. What were some other Omaha places that were kind of like Omaha staples that are in this book? And I don't want to give too much away because you guys need to read this, but what else was in there that initially made an impression on you in the beginning stages of the book?
That's a good question. One that comes to mind is definitely, well, there are two actually. And I'll bring them up because they both have since closed. Piccolo's is another steakhouse that I probably wouldn't have gone to had it not been for the book.
Sure.
It was so lovely. The owners were so just great, so welcoming, so warm. The place was haunted.
Mm.
Probably still is.
Right.
The sign, the neon.
Yeah.
Like, it's just intense. And actually, I think the food was really good. The chicken parm was excellent. You know.
Is that the only thing you had?
I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're kind of known for it.
God, you can't fuck with a good chicken parm.
Yeah.
You just can't fuck with a good chicken
parm. It's hard to find
parm.
A good one. Huh?
You can't fuck with that.
But, you know, and the funny stuff of just, like, you know, how they serve things. It's like...
Was it a little showy?
Well, it's just the old school kind of plates and the...
Okay.
You know, and, like, the bread with the butter pat and whatever.
Right.
I never met there, but it reminds me of... Cassio's?
Yeah, Cassio's.
Yeah.
But Piccolo's was just so great. I could see myself going there more often. After the book was finished, the manuscript had been turned in and approved. They announced that they were closing.
Oh, wow.
But they announced it with a caveat of, we hope to not close.
So get your asses in here.
And I was like, I have a book going to print, and it says you're open. Oh. Like, are you open or are you not open?
Oh, no. Damn it.
And so we just
had
to
kind of...
Did they
hit you up and like, did you get an advance on that?
So I have to, like, reword it so that, like, it's unclear if it's open or not. But it has since closed, which is sad. And that definitely left an impression. I mean, the other is Bohemian Cafe. They were also very warm and welcoming, and that atmosphere was, like, insane.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah.
So those are the types of things. I don't feel... I'm sure they exist in Philly. I just didn't ever dig that deep when I lived there.
Sure.
And so, like, just feel kind of grateful that people pointed them out to me here.
Sure.
I was able to check those out, so.
So there's Piccolo's.
Yeah.
Would Bohemian Cafe be the other one?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're you know, they're dead and gone.
Yep.
Have you ever been to Bohemian?
I did. And as a person of Slovakian, whatever, genetics, because that's all I got, you know, I did appreciate the atmosphere. I lived in that neighborhood for a long time because, yes, Omaha has a Little Italy, which could also be called Little Slovakia, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was the closest thing to cafeteria food I had ever paid for outside of a public school.
Yes.
Now, I caught them on the tail end, so no offense to them, but the service was, they were so happy to see me.
Mm-hmm.
So happy to see me, you know.
The only time I'd ever been there, I went to a show at Sokol, and I wandered my way down there with a friend and had a couple beers. I only had a couple Budweisers there. Like, I never even ate the food, but my friend Jared, like, just praised the place, like, loved it, and it was... unfortunate, because when they were closing, that's when, like, floods of people were going there. Like,
yeah.
I mean, hundreds of people.
Every day,
yeah,
huge
every day.
Line for those, like, 3 months.
And it's just
whatever.
Like, well, why couldn't you have done that the last 5 years?
I know, in that neighborhood, I mean, I'm just going to get off slightly off topic here. I lived in Little Italy. I lived on 10th and William in 2009, and it was desolate. You know, there was nothing for businesses. And so it's kind of a heartbreaker to see now that, whatever, you know, almost 10 years later, people, developers are paying attention to it. And now it's turning into whatever it's going to be.
It's the next Benson, the next
Blackstone. Yeah, yeah.
It's supposed to be this next
year. And they're tearing down old buildings and putting up condos and whatever. But that is a chapter in this book. Yes, Omaha has a Little Italy, which is so funny because I feel like I would tell people that are from Omaha, oh yeah, I live in Little Italy. And they're like, Omaha doesn't have Little Italy. You made that up. It's like, no, there's a fucking sign.
Yeah, I didn't there's a sign.
I mean, to be fair, it had its day.
Sure.
One of my favorite talks I had was very early on. I talked to Louis M.
Oh, wow. The?
The Louis M. Who was, you know, born and raised here, and he talked about his memories as a kid in the 60s. There being so much traffic in that area, because
mm-hmm.
there were, like, 6 or 7 hot restaurants at the time.
Sure.
Like, your car wasn't moving, you couldn't find a place to park. It was just hopping.
Yeah.
Those areas around, you know, 7th to 10th Pacific to... Leavenworth. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that
I mean,
was just,
yeah.
Like,
I mean, it maybe even Q Street. I mean,
yeah.
Down to, it just...
Right.
Right. It looks like a downtown. It looks like an abandoned fucking downtown. But anyway,
it's interesting Louisiana. To walk around there now. But yeah, that was one of the first conversations I had. And I thought that was really interesting that he had kind of, you know, lived through that. But as I'm sure many others did.
Yeah.
And you definitely wouldn't know that now. I mean,
it was a Little Italy then. It,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Orsi's.
Orsi's.
I hold Orsi's so near and dear. 1917 also.
Absolutely.
You know.
Killing it still. Making awesome dough.
It's a weird pizza. It's like a weird old school Italian stuff. My understanding is that that's how pizza, I've not actually been to Italy, but it's like that sheet pan,
mm-hmm.
bready kind of thing. And that's... And it's meant, it was more of like a snack kind
it's
of.
It's a peasant food.
Right.
Yeah, I mean.
And so that's their thing. They do it well.
Yeah.
Just got some ricotta cookies yesterday, actually. Oof. We had like a potluck at work, and I had to bring dessert, and I was like, I don't have time for this.
Oh.
So I went and got ricotta cookies.
God, the cheese
Orsi's.
Cookies are so good. A savory cookie. Oh, fuck.
No, Orsi's is a game changer. Yeah. When I first had Orsi's, I'm just like, yeah.
But. So yeah, neighborhoods was from the beginning something that I wanted to try to cover in this book. And I had to turn to other people because there's only so much research you can do on paper to understand what it was really like.
Right.
And so that's where I really appreciate, you know, I basically borrowed my friend's grandmother, who's 94, to just tell me, like, what's it like?
You know? Was this the gal you went to Graz with?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, we'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but keep going.
But so there were a few neighborhoods I knew I wanted to focus on, and I just, you know, I did the best I could kind of digging in. And talking about the history and what it's like now and where it might go. So
we've talked about the Old Market a little bit. We've talked about Little Italy. Let's move a little farther west.
Shall we?
Into Blackstone.
Yeah.
So the time that this book was published was essentially right on the precipice of that neighborhood
and I really
coming back to life.
Yeah, I tried to choose things that I knew would have some kind of longevity so that it wouldn't, you know, be... I mean, I think everything in the book is relevant even 2 years later. But yeah, so Blackstone, well, it was kind of hard to see where Blackstone was going to go because we knew that, like, everything had been kind of bought up.
Right.
But it hadn't quite opened yet.
Right.
So we were just kind of waiting.
Well, I was going to say, that's kind of that had to have been a tricky thing when you're writing this book, taking a chance on, because you have a chapter on Blackstone, a segment on Blackstone, and that had to be tricky because you were putting time and effort into restaurants. It's fucking restaurants,
man.
Better
be fucking open in 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, that had to be hard. Did you, I mean, obviously you took that into consideration, but did you feel any trepidation? I mean, we don't need to name names, but like, was that, I mean, it had to have been in your head a little bit, like.
Well, ultimately, there were some that I talked to and others that I chose not to, because even if something did happen with their restaurant, I wanted to make sure that those who I featured had, like, relevant things to say.
Sure.
So, one example, not Blackstone, but Dundee, the French Bulldog. I really loved my conversation with Bryce and the French Bulldog. The French Bulldog has since closed.
Oh.
He's still absolutely so relevant to this scene and the food here, so I'm, you know...
What a loss.
I don't regret, you know, even though I thought, oh, this restaurant might not be here forever. It's more about the people anyway, which is actually one of the things that we spend a lot of time talking about.
Sure.
Like, restaurants aren't actually meant to live forever.
Right, right. And I think that's so important to mention, you know, like that was a loss for Omaha. Like,
we're all still feeling that one.
Yeah, and... I visited that spot recently, which is now this amalgamized taco joint, and, you know, more power to them, whatever, but that was such a great place. But, so Blackstone...
Well, to the Blackstone, the one thing that will never go away is the Reuben.
The Reuben!
Let's talk about Reubens, goddamn. Thank you, Brandon.
That?
Can we talk about a fucking Reuben, please?
I hate sauerkraut, but I will eat it on a fucking Reuben. I love sauerkraut on a Reuben, but anywhere else... Sauerkraut, get out of here.
Well,
but,
like, when else do you eat Thousand Island dressing? Are we just, like, gobbling that up
otherwise? I mean, for God's sake.
For me, it's the Reuben is the only time I will touch Thousand Island or
corn beef.
Sauerkraut.
Corned
beef. I fuck with corned beef. I love corned beef.
Okay,
corned beef is awesome. But, yeah, sauerkraut, it's, yeah. This is...
What's interesting about the Reuben is it's so easy to do a bad one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah,
there's
don't
a
cut
lot of
corners.
Bad Reubens out there.
Thinly sliced corned beef. Get the fuck out. We need some actual cooked corned beef that's like chunks of corned beef. That's a Reuben.
So.
All right.
Or at least for me.
Here we go.
And I agree with you on the flavor.
Okay.
But what I've heard is that it's actually, like, the original was a big, thick layer of very, very thinly sliced corned beef.
Okay.
All right.
Now.
Here we go.
Just like religion.
Mm-hmm.
Things have to change or die.
Right.
Maybe the original was not, you know, the best way. So
let's just get into the conspiracy theory of the Reuben. Let's just go. So what's the deal, Rachel? Is it ours?
Fuck yeah. It's
okay.
Ours.
Thank you.
I actually contacted. You know, I wound up interviewing. The daughter of the gentleman who invented the Reuben. I contacted a woman who wrote a piece for, I think it was New York Times, about how it was invented in New York. She had no comment.
Yeah, leave it to
takes
them.
Everything.
God, get the say, fuck out of here.
So, first, the sandwich that was allegedly invented that night it had coleslaw and I think like turkey or something. Like it was like sort of reminiscent of that concept, but it was not a Reuben. And so I am firm in my belief that it was invented in the Blackstone Hotel.
There it is.
A lovely building.
There it is. Not a rumor, folks.
No.
This is not fake news. We are not the New York Times. Oh! No.
And I'm still waiting for a good
I love the New York Times, but they can't take that from
corned
us.
Corned beef, though. I gotta have the actual chunks of corned beef for me to enjoy it. I don't know. The slices, it just doesn't do it for me.
I have a, as I'm sure a lot of people do, wherever you are, but I remember my mom making me. Like, Reuben night was special because it took a little work. I had a single mom. Yep. Brandon has a single mom. Yep. You know, when she...
Corned beef and cabbage. We didn't do Reubens. We did corned beef and cabbage, but, like, that's where my love for corned beef
was. My mom would take... It was a special thing, and as a obese child, that was very important to me. And she would even, like, go so far as to toast the bread in the skillet. Oh, God, with the butter on it and everything.
Was it rye?
Oh, yeah.
Like... Crispy I can't find rye. Great rye here.
Well, this was in Grand Island. This was in Grand Island in the 1980s, so I can't imagine that it was great rye, but it was dark as bread. And I was like, why? Why is the bread brown?
Yeah,
and then I stopped asking questions, shoved in my face, and got fatter than I already was. But such an incredible sandwich. And just New York, you have enough. We love your pizza. We love everything you have to offer. Just fuck off. Give it back to us. You know?
Give us something.
Yeah. But, okay, so...
The Reuben was actually the very first thing I ate here.
No
I came for a two-day visit. I landed. I went to a Leaver's pub. I didn't eat a morsel of food for 24 hours.
Okay.
As most people do when they go to a Leaver's.
You had some caloric intake.
And then I decided to...
Where'd you have your first Reuben?
Barrett.
Oh,
which was, you know.
I like Barrett's.
Give it up for Barrett's.
Crescent Moon is my.
That's your spot
for a Reuben.
And they do the kind of they more, do the like chunk. I worked there for a little while, and on.
But Barrett's is good.
And they would like you on the day that they would cook the meat. You know, every 3 days or whatever. I don't know what it is,
right,
but
right.
You would smell it. Yeah. The whole restaurant would be just completely like. It was so lovely.
So I, a few years ago, was making Reubens for myself and some friends. Might have been when we lived next to it. Maybe not. I can't even remember. But I was looking for sauerkraut at Saddle Creek Bakers. They put it in the weirdest spot.
I'm so glad I don't live in the Midtown anymore.
I couldn't. And I've had two instances at Bakers where I could not find ingredients. Sauerkraut being one. It was like on the bottom shelf tucked behind some baked beans. It made no sense.
That seems so weird for this like
area. I know. This was years ago.
You're supposed to make your own.
Right. Ugh. Yeah. Couldn't find it.
Okay.
You know who I asked to find it? Our buddy Austin Ulmer. He's like, oh yeah, I know where that's at. It's behind the baked beans. It's weird. I know. Yeah. And I was like, you would know because you probably eat that shit with a spoon, don't you?
Mr. Ulmer.
Yeah.
He's very, you know, German.
Yeah. Oh, man. And then El Pato. The Mexican sauce.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. They had like a staff looking for it. But anyway, made the Reubens, did the Thousand Island dressing, and there were people in the kitchen when I was cooking at it looking at what I was doing, and I was just like, don't watch this. Because a couple of people hadn't had it.
Yeah, it looks crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, don't.
It looks wild.
But fucking delicious. So.
So not to give it up, but chapter 4 is all about the creation of the Reuben in Omaha.
You guys like Reubens? You like Omaha?
Buy the book.
Omaha Talks, buy the book, baby. That's where it's at. Yeah. So let's keep going.
Yeah.
Let's move on to where do you want to go with this, Rachel? What else?
What else do you have bookmarked?
So let me see here. Let me see what I got here.
I do have one thing maybe that you had bookmarked. Did you bookmark pizza?
I did not. This was my bookmark. Yes, Omaha has a little Italy, which I've said now at least 12 times because it's one of my favorite chapters. But let me just check here. Oh, it was the fucking Reuben.
We already covered that.
There it is.
So
four is yours.
Chapter 3 is a case study on pizza.
There
and
we
I
go.
Just want to
go.
Mention that because it's such a hotly contested
burgers
thing.
Burgers and pizza are the two things in town. It's like, where do you go get a good pizza? Where do you get a good burger?
And everyone has a different opinion. And I put a survey out on my blog because I wanted to do an actual study, right?
I participated. Well,
And
not in that, maybe you had a tweet not that long ago that was like looking for the best burger, and I'm so fucking sick of this argument, but we're talking about pizza right now.
Quickly though, best burger, Dinkers? No,
I'm gonna say Block 16, man.
What?
I just don't think Dinkers has the best like meat going on. Like, I think their digs and the way that they do it with the big knife in it, like, it's awesome.
Sure. But pound for pound,
I feel like if you're looking for a patty that's like a certain kind of...
What you got?
I think Block 16 is pretty great.
It's so good.
Oh, yeah, Block 16. Okay, I was thinking a lot too. Block 16, though, Block 16's food across the board is anything they come out with is amazing.
It's pretty great.
Huge.
All
in huge ups.
It was the best burger you ever had in
the town. Exactly.
Yeah, like, what the... Like,
we didn't need him to say that.
No, I know.
We didn't need him to say that.
That's kind of crazy.
No,
it is.
He's going to go... Yeah, he's been on the Food Network for 25 years, and he's going to say that that's the best burger he's ever had, so...
And we do, we have talked, Omaha Talks listeners, we have talked about having Paul and Jessica from Block 16 in here, so stay tuned for that one. We want to have them in. But anyway...
They're so lovely. They're
beautiful.
Really great, yeah.
But, so, let's talk about pizza, Rachel.
Yeah, well, I wanted to kind of get to the bottom of it, because there's not... any consensus whatsoever on what is good pizza here, what the preference is. Like, everybody has their own thing. At the same time, there's definitely certain traits that seem to unite what people think of good pizza here.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to, you know, just kind of drill down into that and figure it out. And I did a survey. I got something like 500 responses pretty quickly, which is, you know...
adamant responses.
I mean, I didn't, like, try that hard.
Right. People are double-clicking.
I
mean... Go in a different browser.
And there were some really heated, like, statements in the comments. Most of it was multiple choice or drop-down or whatever, but then there were a few that were...
Did it get shitty? Did it get trolly? Like, fuck you, Chicago style sucks.
It got a little intense. Yeah. And it was... So, I will share that with you sometime if you want to, like...
Absolutely.
And I have no idea who these people are. Right. I mean, they're all
pizza warriors.
Like, it was serious. So I took that data, scientific data, and did some data, you know, visualization, if you will.
Sure, a little quantitative research.
I had my wonderful boyfriend, who's an artist,
literally a pie chart.
He's like, "What do you want me to do?"
Pun intended.
Well, pie chart.
Yeah. Oh, man, you guys have got to buy this book.
And so, you know, we get to the bottom of, like, what are people's favorite toppings? Because everyone talks about hamburger pie, but is it actually, like, what people eat?
Right.
I love hamburger. Pepperoni, I'll fuck with it. I don't mind it. But hamburger pizza is, like, all the way.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, according to the survey respondents, that was only 13%. Okay, I won't give away too much more. I do know that we have an event every year,
the
pizza review that sells out at the waiting room.
At the waiting room.
Put on
by...
I've never been.
Is that a 1% thing?
Yeah. Jim and Mark.
Yeah.
And I know that we have a lot of other opinions, so...
So let's just break this down really quick.
Yeah.
And Rachel, I want you to go first. Brandon, you're second. I'm going to be lastly. Rachel, what's your ideal pizza? Tonight. I don't mean tomorrow. I don't mean last week. Today. What is your pizza?
So, when I say New York style, I'm not a total snob about it.
Sure.
But it does need to be a triangle.
Yes.
It needs to have cheese and sauce. And, you know, you sprinkle your oregano, your Parmesan, even though it's not real Parmesan.
Yeah.
Your Parmesan dust.
Dehydrated milk.
And your
salt.
Red pepper flakes.
Sure.
Possibly some garlic.
Yeah.
Onto a cheese slice that is thin, that you can fold.
And eat while you're walking, maybe?
While you're walking, it probably costs $2.
Yeah.
Like, and that's not just in New York.
Right.
There's some really great ones all over the country.
Sure.
I don't think we quite have that.
No.
I think we've gotten closer, you know, but we're not quite there, and so that's my favorite.
Have you eaten the Virtuoso place?
Yeah, I think it's close. It's darn
Nolly's?
Close.
Really? I haven't... Nolly's is baller, but they're not doing by the slice.
I think Nolly's is also very, very close to that, but it's something about Nolly's, like, it's not cheesy enough.
Okay.
The one in Benson, I think the crust is too, like, crusty and chewy. It's it's really good, but it's just not quite that style.
Okay.
All
right.
I will eat both of those all day.
Okay.
But it's, you know. It's
so you like a New York slice, you get to doll it up on your own. Mm-hmm. If you got to fucking walk a couple blocks, you grab it on your way to a show, stocking up on some pizza, get some food in you.
I will say, yeah, that whole prospect of, like, I just need to eat something right now.
Yeah.
Like,
but I want to enjoy it. I don't want to shove a double cheeseburger in my face. I want to doll up this beautiful piece of pie. Yeah, I can hear that. Brandon, what you got?
I go the complete opposite, actually. And Mama's Pizza, Orsi's. Like, I want it to be square. I want it to be, like...
with some ground beef on that shit.
Yo, some, like, ground beef. It's not their pizza. I don't even know what it is at Orsi's, but it's called something else. But they put thinly sliced potatoes on it, and then marinara sauce, and then, you know, the cheese and the toppings. And I don't know what that's called, but that, it's basically pizza, but it has potatoes on it. And
okay.
Like Midwest boy, potatoes.
You like a hearty-ass pizza.
Yeah, it's
pizza,
just like, yeah. It's
a fucking dish of food.
But yeah, I'm not a Chicago style or anything, but like the square... thick dough. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not opposed to thick dough. There's some people that hate it. Like, I like it.
That's like my go-to. Like, Mama's Pizza or Orsi's are like my two. Like, if I had to, like, you know,
and it
really
is situational.
Going out with pizza. Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
you wouldn't grab that pizza if we were, like, hanging out.
No,
let's grab a slice. You wouldn't want to be like, all right, let me get this fucking bowl of lasagna.
I get it once a year or once every couple of years.
But that's your go-to. Today, that would be your piece of pizza.
If I could order anything, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
But yeah, like Noli's, I've had that recently, and that was pretty good.
That's fucking good, man.
Virtuoso is really good. Yeah, I mean, those are the very, like, quick, like, yeah, I'm, like, in Benson, I want to grab a drink in between, like, hopping bars or whatever, going to a show or something. Like, yeah, I mean, that's the style to go to, but... yeah.
All right, you ready for this?
Oh, God.
I don't give a shit. I like it all. But my staple is, or my commandment is, thou shalt have good dough and good sauce. That's a dual statement. I'm not so much concerned with cheese, and the toppings aren't as big of a deal to me, but I love, love good bread. And I love like a wood-fired crust. It's got that little bit of a burn on it, you know, so it's just enough that you can, I'm not chewing so hard on it, you know. So if I had to choose, because I asked the question here, today I would probably have to go more along the lines of a New York slice. But I like to eat a lot of everything that I do eat. And it's hard to do the deep dish thing, but I love it. But my thing is, this is it. I'm rambling on here.
Yes,
but
please tell us. Like,
yeah, I know. I'm dying too. I'm a sauce guy.
You're a sauce guy?
Yeah, I really am.
I think I am too.
When he finally tells us what the place is,
Rachel, you heard it. Rachel Grace is a sauce guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not so concerned. This is my biggest pet peeve when it comes to any pizza, anywhere, however it's made. Lay off the cheese. I don't need a pound of cheese on this thing, you know?
An undercooked cheese.
Or undercooked cheese. So
it's
just
not even brown.
Flaking up. Yeah, I don't want that.
It's like a mottled kind of just...
Yeah, yeah. Thing. Well, and it's that, like, that commercial mozzarella that comes... I used to work in pizza joints. I worked at Godfather's. Bleh. I worked at it's not for me.
Dude,
it's for a lot of people.
Valentino's though.
That was my first pizza job, dude.
I fucking love Valentino's.
I'm not sure we're all on the same page
but
here.
But
that's okay.
Valentino's is like, I'm in a pinch.
Right.
The kids are hungry.
Sure.
Let's get some pizza. Valentino's is close. It's good. It's better than Pizza Hut. It's better than Papa John's. Papa John's is like the most.
You don't like the garlic soybean oil?
Oh, Jesus.
I like
that's going to kill me someday.
And
my cardiologist is going to be like, you remember all that fucking buttermilk you drank from, or whatever the hell it is?
that margarine you were drinking
by the gallon when you were 13? That's why you're here today.
That's the only thing that they have is good, though. Like, you take that and then put it with another pizza, maybe, but their pizza is trash. Papa John's.
It's pretty gross.
Yeah, and what's his fucking name? Papa John himself.
Let's talk about NFL.
That dude needs to.
He can just.
Yeah. Hey,
but you never.
Take a knee, Papa John. Shut up.
What's your place?
My place? Today, right now, Nolly's Pizza.
I think if I had to pick, it'd be Nolly's as well.
What about Pitch? Pitch is.
Oh, hey, he brings up a good point.
Dude, Pitch is pasta. I know that we're going outside on the pizza, but their pasta is some of the best. Like, their bolognese is like some of the best I've ever had. But their pizza is legit. The fig and pear pizza with spinach.
It's
like,
stinky.
You throw some figs on pizza.
Fig it up.
I'm into it.
Yeah, fig
go,
it up.
Go fig yourself. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you guys ever been to Brick Oven? It's in that weird shopping center on 72nd.
Can I tell you my Brick Oven story?
Is it bad?
No, it's great.
Okay.
It's actually good. I've only been there once.
Did the dad, like, freak out on you?
No, but he was really
freaking. Where's this at?
Okay, it's tucked right behind Mrs. B's.
Okay.
You've driven by it a thousand times. Okay, so I had some time to kill. And I was like, oh my God, what is this weird pizza place back here, right? And I want you to tell your story after this. So I ordered sausage and like green peppers.
You gotta get it well done. If anybody goes, ask for it well done.
I wish I would have known that.
New York style, well done.
I did get New York style. But what I did appreciate about it is I watched this guy take raw meat out of a thing and cook the sausage and then put it on the pizza. Nobody's doing that.
Yeah.
Nobody's cooking sausage, put it on.
I know I want to throw out there, Picasso's
on
center. I fucked with that for the first time about 6 months ago. And Picasso's, it's not bigger than this office. Like, yeah. It's small.
Teeny tiny.
And they have great pizza, too.
Yeah?
Ian put me on that. That
no shit.
Good.
That's Ian's, like, mission.
Yeah.
It is.
We know this guy, Ian. He really likes Picasso's pizza. I don't know what else to say.
His little girl lays down.
Everywhere.
That dude's Instagram account. Okay, anyway. So, Rachel, let's talk about the Brick Oven pizza.
So it's family owned, from what I can tell. There's the, like, I think it's mom, dad, and kids.
It has to be, right?
I mean, or else, I don't know what to say.
Like, I just dealt with one sweaty guy
who
was working his ass off.
That appears to be what it is, and so we've experienced some family, you know, quibbling at times.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But normally, they're very, very nice, wonderful people, very enthusiastic, welcoming, and the pizza is... It's pretty darn close to what I was describing.
Yeah.
You know, but you do need to get it New York style, well done.
Don't be in a rush, maybe.
Don't be in a rush.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the whole pie, it's that kind of pizza. You know that pizza phenomenon, right? Where you can get a slice and you're like, I'm good. Like if it's the kind of like walk and go slice. Mm-hmm. But when you have a whole pizza in front of you,
it's gone.
You will eat all of it?
Uh-huh.
Like, what is that? Is there a name for that?
Compulsive eating, maybe? like
gluttony?
I'm telling you.
If it's there.
I'm telling you. My wife and I will get a Nolly's pizza, and I'll be like, it'll be 9 p.m. Oh my God, I'm so full. And then at 3 a.m., I'm semi-conscious in front of the refrigerator with the door open.
Just and all you're thinking about
going.
Is the pizza.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't wait until my gullet like opens up more space.
And let's talk about cold and hot pizza.
Yeah.
Can we go?
I'm not a cold pizza guy.
Are you fucking kidding me? Didn't you have a single mom?
Yeah, I did. And if I have to, I have to. But cold chicken, cold like
that's
chicken
your,
wings
that's
or cold
thing?
Chicken.
Cold chicken wings. Oh, man.
Dude, cold pizza, it's...
Oh, I gotta do
but
it.
But here's the thing.
That coagulated
pizza,
fat.
Microwave, worst. Like,
worst.
I wish I had a
do you guys know
like,
how to do it?
Oven.
You put it in a pan? Like grilled cheese.
Oh,
pad.
I've seen like YouTube videos.
You put it in a frying pan with like nothing.
No lid?
It doesn't, you can put a lid over it to melt the cheese.
Sure.
Remelt the cheese.
Right.
But you don't need butter, or, you know, no, nothing like that.
Okay.
And you just walk away for 5 minutes. You come back, the bottom is perfectly crisp. Yep.
You walk away, maybe you go do a couple laps around the block.
Yeah.
Some jumpy jacks.
Walk the dog.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Smoke a cigarette.
Speaking of dogs, if my dog was here, he'd probably vote for Domino's. Because one time, my boyfriend left a half a Domino's pepperoni pizza on the table.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 14-pound Pomeranian. He licked the box clean.
Good for him.
I have a half a pizza.
You know what? I just want to say, for commercial pizza, Domino's, not that bad.
No, no, it's all right.
And I'll fuck it. Come at me. I'll stand by that
can
all day.
Can we have
day.
A drunk pizza conversation, though?
Isn't that what this is?
Did you ever eat Night Flight?
Absolutely.
Dude. Oh,
Night Flight. Those ex-cons made some solid buy. And maybe it wasn't that good.
You come from the bar, it's 3 a.m., everyone's like, oh, fuck, I got to eat something or I'm going to, you know, get the spins or something.
Yeah.
Get Night Flight. And it did it. And see, that's the thing. I never had it sober, so I have no reference of if it was any good. Like,
I don't know, man.
Normal hours.
I defended it. And again, because I liked the sauce.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, that's garbage pizza.
And I'm not vegan.
But did you pay attention to the sauce?
I heard that they did vegan
pizza. Did you ever have that?
Yeah.
It went from Night Flight to something else.
It was Home Team.
Home Team.
And then it went to
Night Flight. Thank you for correcting me.
It's well, I would know that.
Yeah. I should know that.
There was a time when I had.
Is it still around?
I don't think so. Is it?
Oh, I don't know.
But
a while, it was like, I think that the Brick Oven people like absorbed Night Flight. So they were making them out of the same place.
Okay.
But I just remember it not being that. It was pretty good.
Do you guys remember when, Star Deli was next to Oliver's.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So one night with Frank, our friend Frank,
mm-hmm.
In 2010, after a night of Oliver's-ing, we got a couple sandwiches from Star Deli.
Okay.
Got you some ounce of Rumpelmans.
Got home or whatever. Like, realized that that's not what we wanted and ordered a Night Flight pizza.
That's beautiful.
And
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
When you come home with food and you're just like, nah. I can hold off. I'm going to take a couple bites of this fucking roast beef.
I'm just going to throw it in the trash because, you know, I'm a rock star.
Right, right.
And I'm going to order something else.
Oh, Frank, I hope you hear this, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. So we're getting all doughy-eyed with pizza here. So let's keep going. What are we going to talk? You guys want to talk?
I have a question because I... Japanese, Thai, Chinese, like that whole like realm of food for me is like... my life.
Perfect.
Do you have an opinion or a...
Yeah, let's go... Let's
Thai
do that.
Thai place or sushi let's go, place? Or?
Yeah, let's go regional. Let's start with Thai and move into sushi. How about that?
Sure.
I'm just gonna, you know, preface this with I don't really like sushi.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I'm gonna go ahead and end this podcast right now.
Turn it off.
No. So let's talk about Thai
Shut
food.
Shut it down.
Let's talk about Thai food.
Well, Parker, I remember you recommended a Thai place to me many years ago.
Yeah.
It opened in 1996.
Yeah.
They're still around.
Yeah.
And although they have their ups and downs, I think they're my favorite.
Yeah.
Which one?
Bangkok.
It's got an East Coast thing.
Yeah.
It does.
Where's Bangkok?
Bangkok is downtown. It's on 16th and Farnham.
The one with the yellow door.
You want to know where my favorite, and nobody really knows, because South 24th is known for Mexican food?
Laos restaurant. Laos Thai restaurant.
Thai food. Game. That reminded me the most of the amazing Thai food I had in Seattle. That was the one place that was very close to it. I have so many, though. Like, Thai Spice is down the street. I love that. But it's kind of more Americanized Thai. Sawin's great.
Yep.
I think that's probably more on the authentic side.
Yep.
Yeah, the one on 16th Street, or 19th Street, or whatever, with the yellow door. It's great.
19th, that's 19th, right. Yeah, 19th, you're right.
19th. But yeah, like, when I lived downtown, like, I would go there.
You had an office right across the street from there.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, I mean, I feel like I've had them all, but I love me some Thai food.
You know, I when Saul Ween opened on Northwest Radio, now they have another location off Ames, what I liked about it is they were not restaurateurs. They were home cooks that were encouraged to start a restaurant. So although I was getting like the white boy dishes, you know, pad thai and green curry and whatnot.
You
got to
test
them
with a pad thai. If they do a good
absolutely,
pad thai.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I liked about it is that it did have a little different thing going on. But after spending a small fortune on Thai food takeout, I took it upon myself to learn how to cook it.
It's
and
hard.
I do not claim to be a master. You've had my Thai food
it's
before.
Good. Yeah, your curry
but,
is good.
But it is hard to cook.
It's hard.
Good.
The pad
it's hard.
Thai.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
spent like $60 on all the ingredients to get
that's
the
what I'm saying.
Pad Thai, and it was terrible. I'm just
once you get the base ingredients, you can get going. But I'm still just like, all right, fuck it. Here's your $13. I can't.
I don't know if you guys have been there, but I frequent, and I've done this for like the last 5 years, but Taste of Asia on 78th. It's next to T-Smith. It's in the strip mall that there's an old Chicago.
Oh, high, dude, yes.
The Hy-Vee and Cass.
Yeah.
So I frequent there a lot. They have really great pho.
They do. Austin, I went there a couple weeks ago. It's a
Vietnamese restaurant.
It used to be Kim Sung.
Oh, shit.
Used to be Kim Sung. The amalgamation of 1,000 different restaurants under one roof. They've got Mexican decor.
Which him, by the way, like, I saw him working at the Chinese restaurant by Westroads.
Kim Sung?
Kim Sung himself.
Himself.
Yeah.
The man, yeah, in the
flesh. If you're listening, Kim Sung, we miss your place.
We love you. We miss you, dude.
So then he opened up a pho place on 114th in the strip mall by the... the Indian buffet that's over there. I don't know if it's still there. It's
curry?
Been a few years. No, I don't remember what it was.
Oh, 114.
I know what you're talking
me.
About.
And he had a pho place there, and I went there once, and it was amazing pho, but at the time where I lived, it was just a bit out of the way. But Taste of Asia is like a... It's a go-to. The woman that owns it is amazing. She knows me by name. She knows what I order.
That's
knows
awesome.
the spice level that I want. Like, I go in there, and I feel like... My mom's cooking the meal. Like, it's amazing.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, and they have Thai food there. Like, their pad Thai is really good. It's more on the savory, salty side than it is, like,
the sweeter,
fishy flavor. But it's all really good, and, yeah.
Well, I'm going to throw you guys a curveball real quick. And this is a podcast. This episode is about food. There's a Korean restaurant in Bellevue. I think maybe I should know this. I've only been there once. But it's kind of a buffet style. Not that you help yourself, but you design your own thing. I had never had Korean food in a restaurant ever. I should probably know the name of it before I talk about it. It's excellent. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think I do, but I don't know the name. I think
I went
there with Todd and Jenny.
I think it's just Korean restaurant.
Yeah.
Maybe I could be wrong, but
yeah.
Incredible. But anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about tacos, god damn it.
Oh,
let's get down to the shit.
Now you're
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Let's go.
Well, what kind of taco do you want, though? I mean, like, I love Moolah's tacos, but that's, like, very, like, Americanized, like...
Well, what we're looking at on the cover of this book, Moolah is exemplified. So, Rachel, let's talk about tacos.
South 24th, though, like, you could seriously have... I did a taco tour for a while with a group of friends, and we would go to a different... We would go to, like, two or three taco restaurants on 24th.
Yeah.
And we made it, like, halfway through, and we went to, like... 12 different taco plates.
So
pupusas, like, everything.
Pupusas are excellent.
But yeah, South 24th is just like a...
So my favorite place for tacos is actually not on South 24th.
Me either.
I think it might be the same one.
Go ahead. You first.
The Little House?
No.
That is.
No.
La Casita?
No. No.
That's what
the boys love. Yeah,
yeah.
The crew. No.
Well, I do too.
I do too. I'm a Milagro guy. And I'm also a Tacos Tijuana guy. I go to two different... And I think actually you told me about Tacos Tijuana. It's at the very south end of 24th. Like right before you cross Q Street.
Yeah, yeah.
But only because they offer some stranger cut. You know, like they do beef. But anyway, when you... Okay, so Moolah tacos are on the cover of this book, the book that you wrote.
Yes.
What was your decision-making process when writing about the best tacos in Omaha?
Well, I think those ones on the cover are, you know, lovely pork tacos from Moolah.
Yeah, it looks like carnitas.
Carnitas.
Very photogenic.
Yeah.
Very, very photogenic.
Got some pineapples, some pickled onions on that shit.
Some...
Whew.
Cilantro or cilantro.
Yeah. I know. I've talked about this before. You go to the authentic joints and you don't want to sound... I sound like more of an asshole when I speak Spanish.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, at La Casita, sometimes you really do have to use that.
You do, yeah.
Spanish, like, you know.
But then I hear another guy doing it and I'm like, fucking asshole, just say pork, you know? But no, yo, you're right.
So it depends
on what they're thinking when we say that.
I don't want to know what they're thinking. It's probably
depends on who you get.
Sure.
So the question was,
what was your decision making process when
of like where to go and what to talk about?
Yep. How did you get to your conclusion?
I think it had just been the places I was going for years. I actually, like, Philly has some great taco places, but I didn't really go to them very much. They're kind of, things have changed now, but it's sort of, you know, your hole in the wall, kind of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent more time at, like, the queso places.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, gringo
your
tacos.
Your queso and your margarita and whatever.
Nacho typical restaurants.
Yeah. That type of thing.
Yeah.
So, when I came here, I felt like, you know, taco trucks were really prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
People were really embracing that. And so, I just kind of started going to La Casita. It's always been one of my favorites. When you go there, you get chips and a bean dip.
Yep.
And a red and a green salsa.
Yep.
And those things together are heavenly.
Absolutely.
And there's no denying that. Their al pastor, like, all of their tacos are amazing. So I just think that that will always be my favorite. And I talk about them in the book. I also talk about, it's now called La Choza.
Oh, yeah.
I believe. Mm-hmm. On 25th Street. That's probably my second favorite.
And they're
they have the
Venezuelan?
Salvadoran.
Salvadoran, yeah. Uh-huh.
So, they've got a photo in here of their pupusas.
Oh,
and so those two have just always been my favorite,
mm-hmm.
and it'd be hard to stray from at this point. Mula, of course, being an excellent photogenic example.
It's where you take your mom.
Of great, tacos.
Yeah.
It is definitely your Instagram photos, your vibe.
Mm-hmm.
I would not go to either of those places that I just mentioned for vibe.
Sure.
Necessarily. Like, you know, and sometimes you'll be there for an hour. Like, it's not quick either.
Don't go in there in a hurry. Maybe bring your own bottle of water.
Yeah.
I brought up the drunk pizza thing. What about Alboranos? You're drunk. Mexican food. Do you guys ever go to
Alboranos? Man, I went through that phase, but when I found out the La Esmeralda was 24/7, eliminated any Alboranos.
So I'm an Esmeralda hater.
Let's talk about it.
I've had some gross shit there.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get the goat?
No. Oh. I got, because I was trying to, at that point in my life, not eat beef,
mm-hmm.
I got chicken tacos.
Mm.
And everyone's like, well, why would you do that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why is it on the menu if it's disgusting?
Mm.
It's like these little
They put it on the menu for you.
Yeah, but it was like, I didn't eat it. It was such a bad choice.
Did you hear me? Did you get the goat?
Yeah. No goat.
Every time I go there, I ask for the goat. They've been out for like 4 years.
Are you a goat fan?
I love goat. I love goat and I love lamb.
Lamb's awesome.
Yeah.
You like the game meats. Mm-hmm.
I like deer and I like elk and weird shit like that. But I like it in doses.
Yeah.
You know, like I just want a little 3-ounce thing of it. I don't want to sit down and eat all of it.
Not just go head first.
No. I just like a little bit. Like, I like a lot of Caribbean food and stuff. I just like peasant food, base ingredients and weird shit that I didn't eat in my house growing up. You know, Brandon and I, growing up in Grand Island, heavy Hispanic population and great, great Mexican restaurants. La Mexicana. Big fan. It was the first authentic Mexican food I had ever had. 4th and Sycamore. I was 12 years old. I went there on the day they were open.
Really?
1996.
It was a warm day. They have a tortilla factory.
Is fucking amazing.
Grand Island kind of sounds like, I've not been there, but it reminds me of like Sioux City, because they've also got like La Juanita.
I feel like Sioux City is maybe slightly bigger.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
But
well,
I play
Grand
in a big...
Grand Island has passed the metro area landmark, though.
True. But that's an excellent observation. I play in a band with Sioux City natives, and we speak the same language, and we pick that up immediately. So when I visit Sioux City and we go to restaurants, like, oh, yeah. You know, there's like a burnt out car outside, but it doesn't affect the way the food tastes, you know. But anyway.
I'm glad you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. That's a super astute observation. But I am starving after all of this. God damn it.
I'm not
super
hungry at all.
Oh, my God. So, Rachel, where can people buy this book?
They can right now buy it on Amazon. Is probably the best place.
And the title of the book is?
Omaha Food, Bigger Than Beef. Bigger Than Beef is the idea that, you know, when people find out you're from Omaha, oh, so Omaha Steaks, right? which I do have. Yeah, if it's not Conor Oberst, it's Omaha Steaks.
Look at
that. And I wanted to kind of
just
say,
remind you that Parker bookmarked the book with an Omaha Steaks receipt.
It's no, no, no. It's a receipt from Baker's with a goddamn Omaha Steaks or First National.
It's everywhere.
That was not on purpose.
But, you know, we don't, like, sit around guzzling steak all
no.
the time.
Also, no. by the way, Omaha Steaks, it's all frozen food. I don't, yeah. it's not, it's,
well, they it's did right. their part in, you know, the frozen food revolution.
For
just,
sure.
Just and be, the, just you know. Be better than that, folks. Be better than that. For all you outside Omaha listeners, be better than that. We'll get you a nice steak.
If they want to it's your last meal podcast, before you leave. Though, it's okay. We'll
yeah.
Also,
but Omaha Steaks, we're taking offers.
The book talks a lot about, you know, how this city was totally built on the livestock industry. Mm-hmm. Like, no joke, it was the largest for a long time
right.
in the country. And that is so huge. It's so many of the neighborhoods that we talk about were part of that.
South Omaha.
And, yeah. And so, like, now, though, things have, you know, like, mm-hmm. that's no longer. So it's time to move on. So yep. let's, it's okay to pay homage to that. But have that not be like what we're all about today.
Right.
And
widen your vision.
That's what the book is about, like celebrating it, but saying we've moved on.
Absolutely. So. And what else do you got going on?
Right now?
Yeah. What else do you want to talk about? Floor's yours.
Well, my pinky finger is finally healed.
Okay.
So I'm playing guitar again.
Playing guitar again. All right.
So that's a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you doing anything outside? Do you have any more... do you have the blog going again? Where can people find that? Is Fat in Omaha still back up?
FatinOmaha.com is still alive as far as you can still go to it and find it. I kind of moved on from writing it because I found out that it's not very nice to talk shit about people's restaurants.
Sure, sure.
So
especially when you're not an anonymous figure.
Yeah, I was a young whippersnapper and, you know, was just trying to tell it like it is, but figuring out that I think that that's appreciated to be honest about things and urge people to do better. But at times it verged into, like, not just constructive criticism. It was
snarky.
Just kind of snarky for my own, like, you know, good, my own betterment.
Sure.
And so I have moved away from that. But I am working on potentially a book about beer history now.
There you
go. That is my next move.
And that's going to happen.
Plenty of bars in Omaha.
Yeah.
In Nebraska in general.
Oh, Jesus. We love it. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It's been a blast. Again, ladies and gentlemen, this is Omaha Talks. I am your co-host, Parker Steele, in the house with
Brandon.
And our first guest,
Rachel.
And we appreciate you guys listening. This is a podcast about Omaha, for Omaha, and anybody else listening. So check us out, and we'll see you next time, folks.